Hello, this is Chris Claremont speaking to you from behind the panels. Hope you enjoy the listen, and hope you enjoy the books you're reading.
They can be a great people color if they wish to be. They only lack the light to show the way. For this reason, above all, their capacity for good. I have sent them you. My only son.
My spider senses are starting to tingle.
Just hang on to your lariat.
Wonder what kind of a scene I'm getting into.
And welcome to issue 63 of Behind the Panels, the comic book podcast that would rather kill a busload of children than reveal our secret identities. I'm Richard Gray.
And I'm David McVeigh.
In this issue, Superman wants you to join the US Army. Then it's another Mystery Marvel film, more casting news, what we've been reading, Jumper's Coke and the loss of Sweet Mary Jane. Plus our kick-ass pick of the week, Man of Steel, the new Superman film from Zack Snack Snyder. This is Behind the Panels. Back to the smooth summer sound. Johnny Guitar Watson and Superman Lover.
There's a definite sound from that era. I love that sound.
Oh, I love the big horns. Big fat horns.
Big fat horns.
Love it. David, how are you? Surviving?
Barely. Let's see. We went 2 days solid of Supernova. Then I went to work. Then I had to take my son to camp. I am exhausted.
To call it 2 days of unrestrained geekery.
Absolutely. But boy, I tell you, as fun as Supernova is, you really do feel it by the end of it.
Feel the burn.
You feel the burn. But we did get some really good stuff while we were there.
We did. We'll talk about that a little bit in a minute. But we also talk about that next week. When we're actually putting out a Supernova special, we actually recorded a special live on the floor from Supernova.
So the sound's going to be a little different.
Yeah, be prepared for that. But you'll agree that the prep was worth it because we got interviews with all sorts of folk. You heard Chris Claremont at the top. We spoke to him again. Nicholas Scott, Tom Taylor, Tristan Jones, Alex Saviuk. Who else did we get?
We got, you said Tom Taylor already?
I said Tom
Taylor.
Taylor.
Tristan Jones. Wait a minute, Paul Bedford?
Paul Bedford, who did the list, who we're also going to be featuring in an upcoming episode.
And of course, Josh Spencer.
Josh Spencer, our if you like the cartoons on our site and on any of our merch and our logo, of course, that's Josh Spencer.
And you can actually see him working. We'll get the videos up on YouTube soon. We did a caricature challenge with him, which was a lot of fun.
And because his URL is so cool, we have to say it's attackninja.blogspot.com.
That's correct.
Yeah.
One of the coolest URLs in existence.
so we did that in the last week, so we'll talk about it in the moment. But just to give us a little bit of break to wind down if that smooth Johnny Guitar Watson music didn't smooth you down enough already, I am going to hit back the Wayback Machine and take us all the way back to 1974.
For the Air Force, Dick Williams.
I know what it's like to manage a championship team. The excitement and satisfaction of seeing a team of superstars perform. It must be the same way for the people who manage the Air Force. Pilots, navigators, mechanics, technicians, all working together on a team with a common goal. You can be part of that team. The Air Force will train you in one of over 100 skills, training that can count towards college credit, in skills that will be useful to you in or out of the service. Whether you're a man or a woman, whether you qualify to be an officer or an airman, the Air Force probably has a super job for you. What's eating you, Superman?
Well, they won't let me play with them.
Why not?
You say I'm too good.
I know how you feel. Why don't you try the Air Force?
Will they let me play the outfield?
I'll ask your nearest Air Force recruiter.
I will. I'll do it. How about you coming along? You could use a job, too.
For the location of your nearest Air Force recruiter, call toll-free 800-447-4700.
Oh, my God, Superman's a jarhead.
You should see him in the clip, too. I'll embed the clip in the show notes on the site because Superman is huge. Lois Lane's been cooking him one too many pies, I think.
Oh, yeah. Man, he also sounds like he's dropped about 40 IQ points.
I think I'll join the Air Force thing. Oh, David, what a week. That was a 1974 Superman Army recruitment, Air Force recruitment clip. So,
boy, they were trying hard then, weren't they?
Yeah, I'm going to go and check out my... Let me see, early 70s. What a major US event had just occurred? Yeah, no, look, that was one of the many interesting PSAs from Superman's history. I mean, I played some of the Frosted Flakes and Kellogg's stuff.
Frosted Flakes is a PSA.
There's a stack of Say No to Drugs and all sorts of things. There's also my favorite, which is...
Not so fast, nicotine.
There you go.
I keep finding
these
things.
We've come a far, far, far distance from...
Look, up in the sky, it's a bird.
It's a plane.
It's Superman.
We've come a long way.
And as we'll find out in the second half of the show, sometimes I wish we hadn't gone so far. That's right. We're covering Man of Steel, which has finally come out this week in Australia. And we did that was one of the things we've been watching this week. But for everything else that we've been reading and watching, I'm going to introduce you to a section that I like to call What We've Been Reading and Watching.
Well, looks like we got ourselves a reader. Read between the lines, bitch.
Actually, I think I said last week I'm officially going to call that segment "Read Between the Lines, Bitch."
Yeah, I was going to say it's a very creatively named segment. Somebody trying to contact you over there?
Possibly. I've heard the sign, David. Oh, I see. Yeah, look, we've just had it. I've got all my social media open because right as we're doing this show, there's been a leadership spill in the Australian Parliament, and one of our old prime ministers is back being the current prime minister by the sounds of things.
And this is something the Americans wouldn't understand, but the way our political parties work is that we've actually elected a party, not a person. And we've already had this prime minister kicked out once already, and now it looks like
this is about the third time he's challenged to come back in.
But so. What did you say? It looks like it's going to be a Rudd slide.
A Rudd slide, yes.
Yeah, so...
Right, so what we've been reading, I think we'll mention Supernova briefly because we're doing a whole show next week, but I had a ball at this. It's been a while since I've been to a con, and I'm doing three this year.
just don't do anything by half.
No, so. I don't do anything by half at all, but at least it was Supernova's the biggest one in Australia, and Supernova Sydney is arguably the biggest of the Supernovas.
I think it is. I mean, let's face it, Sydney has the largest population, so it's where everybody is centralizing.
And it was massive.
So.
It was the barn. For those of you not in Sydney, it's held at the Dome, which is where the Olympics were held up in this park. This is a massive, massive venue.
And they made it bigger this year.
Yeah, so it's huge. It was full of cosplayers. We got around talking to them. We met, as we mentioned at the top of the show, a whole bunch of writers and artists. Very exciting. I got a couple of sketches.
Also got a sketch by this gentleman.
Hello, I'm Alex Saviuk here at Supernova, and you are listening to Behind the Panels.
Yes, you did.
Yes, I did. Alex Saviuk is best known for his Spider-Man work. He did Web of Spider-Man for 8 years, but he's also... he said he's been associated with... You'll hear in the interview we do with him with Spider-Man for the last 25 years or something. So he's just an amazing guy.
But he's also, he was connected with a book that we actually reviewed on this show.
He started out at DC, and one of the things he did was he did the Green Lantern Green Arrow series, after O'Neill and Adams left. He was one of the artists on that. So I got him to do a Green Arrow sketch. It's classic Ollie, and it is awesome. I just did the head sketch for that. So that, look, you know, it's fun for, I mean, that's kind of my reason for going, is to meet these guys, because, you know, there's only so many times they're going to come out here. And at one point in the day, I was sitting, you know, David was doing the video, and I was sitting between Chris Claremont and George Perez on a bat. And I was like, oh my God, you know, this is.
I was saying, and I felt honored because I had to keep getting out of George Perez's way.
who almost knocked over our camera. So, but never mind, George, we'll get you next time.
We, to be fair, we did invite him, and he turned us down. So, his loss.
But he was probably the most popular thing at the con.
He was. I don't think his line was ever not there.
No.
We saw Alex, we saw Chris Claremont have lulls in the day. I don't think George Perez's line ever stopped.
No.
So he was definitely in demand, and you can understand why he didn't really have time for us. No. But we also met a bunch of indies as well, and the indies were really good.
Yeah, I got to give a shout out. Books we picked up with things like The List, which we're going to cover, Space Pirates, which looks fabulous. We picked up a book called Winter City by some local guys. Look, you know, and that's another reason you get along to these cons, because you just find stuff that you're not going to necessarily find in your local shop.
Absolutely. So next week we'll be actually having the audio show of that, which we're going to piece together from what we recorded there and some of the interviews and stuff like that. But also be keeping an eye out on the site for a link to our new YouTube channel when it goes up, because we'll be putting up the cosplayers. We'll be putting up the actual... on some of them we actually have video interviews, so we'll actually put some of the video interviews up. Unfortunately, Alex and Chris, we didn't get video interviews of. We got audio interviews of them.
But that's fine.
That's fine, but we did get video interviews of Tom Taylor and Tristan.
I went a little bit of video with Nicola as well.
So we're going to put all this stuff up, but the cosplayers are really where the video shines, and some of these guys went out of their way, and we got some great stuff with them. We also talked to some of the stall holders as well.
Yeah, that was interesting, including a new one that's in Newtown here in Sydney called Superhero Supplements and Comics, which is basically combining health supplements and weightlifting supplements with comics. Novel idea, but as the guy says in the clip, superheroes have to get big somehow.
Yeah, absolutely. So, and look, they were great guys. And we shouldn't give too much away, because there's a lot coming. Just over the next 2 weeks, you're going to just see stuff filtering through. Yeah. So there's already photos up. Go check those out at behindthepanels.net.
Yeah, the cosplay photos are up. People have been loving them. Go check them out, because there were some really good cosplayers this year. But to get back to what we've been reading, I think the big book we have to mention from the last week is Age of Ultra number 10.
Absolutely. We finally bring this thing to an end.
Oh, thank God. Now, look, no one has, as far as I can tell, no one's happy with the series. None of the majors.
My son was. He liked it.
Well, maybe he's the target audience. Maybe. But Newsarama's been particularly harsh on this. And they gave the last couple of issues like 2 out of 10. And I wouldn't go that far. But it is a completely misguided series. Now that we've seen all 10 issues, I stand by the fact that it meandered off to somewhere that never came back to. Like, it started out Age of Ultron, then it told this other story, and then we never got back to the Age of Ultron at all.
We kind of came... We never came back to that post-apocalyptic world, which is what we really wanted to see more. The first 2 issues or 3 issues of this book were rock solid.
I disagree, because the first issue, I think, was perfect. The second issue was not quite as good, because they were just talking about the issue. The third issue, they were kind of still talking. You think,
the third issue ends... I think it's the third issue that ends with the discovery of Vision at the command post, basically.
And that never pays off.
No, and that one, up till that point, I'm like, I'm in on this series. This is really good stuff.
Yeah.
And then it just kind of goes off in the weirdest directions.
We go off in an alternate... Well, basically, it ends up with Wolverine going back. Everyone knows this now. Wolverine goes back,
And we do spoilers anyway, people.
Yeah, Wolverine and Sue Storm go back in time, kill Hank Pym before he has a chance to invent Ultron. But then by the time they come back to the present, they've created an alternate reality where everything's wrong. Mm. So they have to go back in time again to fix that. By the time they get back, they seem to have... And, you know, implant a virus that will ultimately stop Ultron. By the time they do that, they come back, they've fixed the Age of Ultron, but they've been time-traveling so much, they've basically broken time-space reality. Now, that ending in and of itself is kind of cool. I like that ending. I like the fact that, they've opened up the Marvel multiverse now. The problem is it's been done before, and it's been done by the Distinguished Competition. It's also been done by...
Look, I think it's been done in Marvel before, too.
Marvel before, Age of Apocalypse and all the Extreme X-Men stuff. The most recent run of Extreme X-Men. The The other thing is too, because it like basically that moment is the equivalent of the Infinite Crisis Superman Prime Punch, which shattered and created the multiverse. And I say
I know what you're talking about, but I don't understand Crisis.
But that's the DC equivalent to this, and it's just all they've done. The whole series is now just setting up a bunch of other things, and this is exactly what Avengers vs. X-Men did.
Yeah.
Avengers vs. X-Men was the setup for Marvel Now.
Pretty much, yeah.
And this is the setup for the Age of AI, because we've still got two sort of epilogues, which were going to be Age of Ultron 10 AI, and what was originally called Age of Ultron 10 UC is now going to be called a new miniseries called Hunger. So basically, the last, if you get the physical copy of this thing, which is polybagged in black to avoid spoilers, it started out with a foil cover, ended with a polybag.
I think you pointed out on Twitter, we're back in 1993.
Yeah, exactly. and I think Marvel has been for some time now with the 400 variant covers they have for every issue. Because they're charging a little bit more for those variants than they used to. What you actually saw was at the end of that, because they've created this in the actual physical issue, you saw ads for all these spin-off series in between pages. Angela appears, which is the big spoiler.
I was about to come back to Angela, because this entire thing just feels like an excuse for somehow bring her into the Marvel Universe.
It's like, yeah, we have to...
now that we've shattered the space-time continuum, we can have an angel come in, you know?
Yeah, and so why not bring in Superman?
Yeah, you know? Exactly. And I just look at it and just go... first of all, I thought Neil Gaiman was above this, because it's Neil Gaiman's character.
And he's going to be co-writing the Guardians of the Galaxy issues that spin out of this.
Yeah, because apparently she's going into Guardians. Yeah. So, and I just look at it and go, Guardians doesn't need your angel, take it away.
Although Guardians needs a bit of help at the moment.
Yeah, look, I think Guardians will grow into itself. It doesn't need an angel. That's not going to help. No. That's not going to help it.
But really, the whole thing just smacks of salesmanship. And that's just...
Best moment in the entire book, though. Quite frankly, the price of admission was made by the shot of Miles Morales, Ultimate Spider-Man, swinging along and looking up and seeing Galactus looking down.
Yeah, look.
Price of admission right there. That's...
I love Spider-Man. And I thought that was a great miniseries.
Yeah, I thought it was fantastic.
And I think that was one of Bendis' strongest crossover miniseries that he's done. It was 5 issues in and out. And this is what...
No crossovers.
That's what Age of Ultron should have been. Just 5 issues, and it would have, if Age of Ultron had been half the length, it would have been good. Unfortunately, they had to labor the point in order to really bring in, you know,
to milk it for all it's worth.
Well, I think so. And someone actually pointed out on our comments on my review on the page, and I'm sorry I don't have your name in front of me, but they said if it had been half as long, Marvel would have made $19.95 less per buyer. So,
but it would have been a far better book, which means that more people would have bought it rather than abandoned it.
I don't think they had any sales problems on this.
Yeah, I think people started to abandon it, because I know hardcore Marvel people who were abandoning it halfway through, and that was the problem.
I'll get anything cosmic, and this is basically the big prelude to the cosmic event of 2013-14, I had to read it.
I just look at it and go, you know, as many steps as Marvel is doing right at the moment, and they are. They're doing a lot of things right. I mean, they've got a lot of really good books on at the moment. Marvel Now was a strong launch. And you look at it and go, for everything that they're doing right, they still have one problem that they seem to be doing, which is that they keep doing these events that are just ads for another event.
I actually heard a comment on Bleeding Cool. There's a video there that Grace Randolph does, and she has a weekly YouTube show, and she said if they spent more time on narrative and less time on setting up the event, they would have better stories. And she used Avengers versus X-Men as the comparison as well, which I think is a perfectly apt comparison because it did exactly the same thing.
Well, we go back for it. I mean, this starts with Fear Itself.
Yeah.
Fear Itself was the start of this model. And then we had Extinction, which was another one.
Avengers Extinction.
Extinction, sorry.
Ran into Avengers versus X-Men, which in turn ran into Marvel Now.
Which ran into Marvel Now. And you sit there and go, really? Are we just one event is just an ad for another event rather than concluding the event. I'm going to come back to DC on this one, and I'm going to say that DC, for all the faults of the New 52, Flashpoint was a perfect event. It was a certain number of issues. All the books were satellite books. It didn't have lots of crossovers. They were all individual satellite miniseries. The whole thing was self-contained, tight, and ready to go.
Well, the ball's in their court now, because their next big event is the Trinity War, which kicks off next month. So,
which I think they're going to stuff, quite frankly.
But well, anyway. They probably will. But I mean, if they play that out and it works, because it's only going to be contained within the Justice League books, if they can pull that off, then maybe people are going to start to win. They're going to start winning people back. I'm not convinced because
Track record over the last 2 years has not been good.
No. There's only a handful of books I'm still reading at DC. Yeah. Quickly, though, I'm going to mention two other books that I have been reading. I read a lot of stuff in the lead-up to the interviews, but I read last week X-Files Season 10, number 1.
I've got this. I haven't read it yet.
Which is quite good. It's a Monster of the Week episode, but it is building up a conspiracy. But it's moved away from the alien conspiracy stuff, but we're back into Mulder and Scully territory.
Right.
A few of the other characters have popped up. It's good, solid stuff. I like the writing. I like the art. Some people complain about the art. I like it. The other book that I read was The True Lives of the Fabulous Killjoys, number 1. Now, this has been really, really anticipated. It's out by Dark Horse. It's written by Jared Way, who's the lead singer of the former band, My Chemical Romance. So it's got a big cult following already. Mm-hmm. But he's written some Eisner Award-winning comics already. And the artist is the amazing Becky Cloonan, who's nominated for an Eisner this year. Now, it's great. It's a post-apocalyptic thing. It's got a narrative device, which is pretty much Angry Bob by any other name.
The man with the industrial dick.
You're listening to Angry Bob, the man with the industrial dick. Yeah. It's a great little story, and I can't wait to read more. And I recommend this highly to everyone. So go find it.
Yeah, I'll have a look at this.
The True Lives of the Fabulous Killjoys, number 1.
Fantastic. No, I'll definitely have to have a look at that one.
For all the other latest reviews, check out behindthepanels.net. Go to our review section at the top. You can also find us on comicbookroundup.com, where you can compare what critics say from all over the web. Right, David.
This is the part where I have to put my finger to my ear like I'm a proper newsreader.
Yes, because we're going to do the news headlines. Marvel announces yet another mystery film for the 8th of July 2016. That's now three untitled films for Phase 3, if you're counting.
Greg Pak and Aaron Cooter will take over Action Comics in November.
Actor Josh Hellman joins X-Men Days of Future Past in a secret role.
Arrow Season 2 is set to premiere in the US on the 9th of October on the CW, and we are there.
Oh, I'm actually there.
You are.
Actress Shailene Woodley in the character of Mary Jane has been cut from The Amazing Spider-Man 2. The character is now being saved for a later film. Woodley is unlikely to return.
Legendary Picture cuts ties with Warner. Legendary had previously worked on the Dark Knight films, 300, Superman Returns, and Man of Steel.
And an interesting bit of news this week, Jim Carrey's been making headlines and being rather talkative on social media, now decrying the violence in the forthcoming Kick-Ass 2 and refusing to promote the film. David, this has been an interesting little story, hasn't it?
It has. This actually came across my iPad, was it this morning or last night?
It's been kicking around for a few days.
Yeah, but I hadn't noticed up until then. And then, of course, Mark Millar has recently come out and now made comment as well on this. It's a very interesting story because basically Jim Carrey plays Colonel Stars and Stripes. It's a major story.
No, Colonel Stars and Stripes.
Colonel
right.
Stars and Stripes in Kick-Ass 2, which is, if anybody's read the book, we know how violent it's going to be. And we also know how violent his death is.
Oh, should I give you an example of
yes, please.
Yeah, there's a dog on your balls.
My favorite line in that trailer. And look, as soon as I saw Jim Carrey in that role, I thought, my God, he's nailed. This is going to be fantastic. Then Sandy Hook happened.
Yes. Well, apparently that happened about a month after he finished filming.
After he finished filming. And he suddenly has now come out, and according to his Twitter, you've got the Twitter post in front of you, dude?
Yeah, look, it just sort of came out of nowhere. He just tweeted this week, "I did Kick-Ass a month before Sandy Hook, and now in all good conscience, I cannot support that level of violence. My apologies to others involved with the film. I'm not ashamed of it, but recent events have caused a change in my heart."
Now, I'm sure this is not in any way affecting his contractual obligations and so forth, but what he is saying is he can't promote this film. So he's still in it. He hasn't left anywhere or anything like that, but he just feels he can't promote it. Now, my issue to this is I don't think Kick-Ass 2 is actually the same circumstances as Sandy Hook. So it's not like they're making a film that directly relates to that. You know, so.
But it is part of this knee-jerk reaction of violence in media where people seem to instantly want to withdraw from anything violent after a violent event. And I can understand that. I can understand how a culture of violence has led to things like Sandy Hook. But what's interesting is Mark Millar's response. And he went on Conan O'Brien and talked about the time Mark Millar spoke about the time Jim Carrey had gone on Conan O'Brien, dressed as Kick-Ass, expressing his love for the first film, which was equally as violent. And he goes on to say that, as you know, Jim is a passionate advocate of the gun control, and I respect both his politics and the opinion, but I'm baffled by the sudden announcement as nothing seen in this picture wasn't in the screenplay 18 months ago. Yes, the body count is very high, but a movie called Kick-Ass 2 really has to do what it says on the tin. So, you know, he goes on to say that...
I think a sequel to the picture that gave us Hit Girl.
Yeah, was always going to have blood on the floor and should be no shock to the guy who enjoyed the first movie so much. My books are very hardcore, but the movies are adapted for a mainstream audience. And if you love the tone of the first picture, you're going to eat this up with a big giant spoon. Like Jim, I'm horrified by real life violence, even though I'm Scottish. But Kick-Ass 2 isn't a documentary. No actors were harmed in the making of this production. This is fiction, and like Tarantino and Peckinpah, Scorsese and Eastwood, John Borman, Oliver Stone and Chan-Wook Park, Kick-Ass avoids the usual bloodless body count of most big summer pictures and focuses instead on the consequences of violence.
Which is interesting considering the movie we're going to talk about later on.
Yes. Eventually, he goes on to say, ironically, Jim's character in Kick-Ass 2 is a born-again Christian, and the big deal was made of the fact that he refuses to fire a gun as something he told us attracted to him in the role in the first place.
Yeah.
So...
Look, I'm kind of in two minds about this. I respect Jim Carrey's decisions, I respect his opinions, and I respect the fact that this Sandy Hook has obviously deeply affected him.
Mm.
But at the same time, it's a movie, dude.
Yeah, I mean, look, you know, I like Jim Carrey, and I never used to. I never thought I'd say myself saying that, because I didn't like his early stuff. But over the last 10, 15 years, I think that he has proven himself to be a balanced actor who is capable of great comedy and great drama. And I do respect his opinion on the craft, unfortunately. And while I think his instincts are right on wanting to protect people from violence, this may not necessarily be the way to go about it.
No, the way to go about it would be not to be in the violent film to start with.
Perhaps.
Especially considering he was an advocate for gun control and so forth before he signed on to the movie. You kind of look at it and go, you can't have your cake and eat it too, dude, you know?
I agree. But David, that's the news for the week. And this is traditionally the time where we go and look at the pick of the week. And I should just say, though, before we do that, if you want any more news and updates, always check out behindthepanels.net, because I am constantly updating that with news and stuff.
You are. You're a machine.
I've been accused of that more than once this week. Now it's time for what I traditionally like to call the pick of the week.
Well, see how you like this.
What is it, Batman?
Whatever it is, it's awfully funny.
It's the pick of the week.
Goodbye, my son. My hopes and dreams travel with you.
He'll be an outcast. They'll kill him.
How? He'll be a god to them.
What if a child dreamed of becoming something other than what society had intended? What if a child aspired to something greater?
My son was in the bus. He saw what Clark did.
You're the answer, son. You're the answer to Are We Alone in the Universe?
Can I just keep pretending I'm your son?
You are my son. And I have to believe that you were sent here for a reason. And even if it takes the rest of your life, you owe it to yourself to find out what that reason is.
How do you find someone who has spent a lifetime covering his tracks?
The
For some, he was a guardian angel. For others, a ghost who never quite fit in.
You will give the people of Earth an ideal to strive towards. They will race behind you. They will stumble. They will fall. But in time, they will join you in the sun. In time, you will help them accomplish wonders.
You believe your son is safe?
I will find him!
My father believed if the world found out who I really was, they'd reject me. He was convinced that the world wasn't ready. What do you think?
What's the S stand for?
It's not an S. On my world, it means hope.
Well, here it's an S. How about...
Excuse me.
David, you got to love the Internet Movie Database description. A young itinerant worker is forced to confront his secret extraterrestrial heritage when the Earth is invaded by members of the Evo.
I love IMDb's listings. I really do. That's one of the things I miss most about film, actually, was always pulling the IMDb listing.
The official Warner one is: a young boy learns that he has extraordinary powers and is not of this earth. As a young man, he journeys to discover where he came from and what it was he was sent here to do. But the hero in him must emerge if he is to save the world from annihilation and become the symbol of hope for all mankind.
Okay, when does that happen in the film?
Yeah, I don't know. This movie by Snack is stars Henry Cavill as Clark Kent / Kal-El.
Can I just say he is the man's man?
I'm in love with his body.
Oh, he is just, I mean, and he's got a hairy chest, and I mean, he's just a man's
just
man.
Just like, you know? Amy Adams. Yeah. I'm in love with Amy Adams.
I was actually surprised about the hairy chest, and most importantly, I was actually surprised that once he put the suit on, you could still see his hairy chest under the suit.
Can I just say, I don't think there's anybody in this cast I don't want to sleep with. Henry Cavill, Amy Adams, Michael Shannon, Diane Lane, Russell Crowe.
Oh, I don't know about Russell.
Aunt Chitrell. I don't know about Harry Lennox.
I don't know about Richard Schiff.
Lawrence Fishburne, I could...
Christopher Maloney, I'd go.
Islet Zura, I would. That was Laura Lorvan.
Oh, yeah, she was lovely. Yeah.
Even Christopher Maloney.
I say Christopher Maloney, he's a hot man.
Basically all of them, except for the kid that played Clark Kent at 9 or 13. You know,
and maybe Lawrence Fishburne.
No, look, you know, why not?
I don't know.
It's, you know.
This conversation is going in really strange
places. It's a lonely, cold night. We might go there. Look, you know, this movie was meant to revive the DC cinematic... Well, start the DC cinematic universe, because Marvel have been doing such a marvelous, marvelous job.
Well, actually, I think you were right the first time, because I think Green Lantern was supposed to start the DC universe.
Which they've retconned a little bit. We'll talk about that in a minute. This is basically... Snack has done some great films before. I mean, if not great films, visually faithful adaptations of 300 and Watchmen.
Mm. And a relatively decent remake of Dawn of the Dead.
I actually quite like Dawn of the Dead, and this might be sacrilege to say.
You go there.
elements of it... are more relevant to the 21st century than the original. But the original is always going to be one of my favorite, if not my favorite zombie film of all time.
It is my favorite zombie film.
I mean, like, you know. But this is something else.
Just preceding this film, he had Rise of the Guardians, the Owls of Gloom.
Oh, God, I've forgotten about that.
And Sucker Punch.
Yeah.
So he wasn't on a good run. Because neither of these films turned dollar squat at the box office.
No, and Sucker Punch is very much like this in the sense that he's cherry-picked all of cool things he liked from other things and tried to make them work. This is written by David S. Goyer, who did...
And that's kind of the first problem.
Yeah, well, Goyer did the first Batman film, didn't he?
He co-wrote the first Batman. David Goyer on his own wrote Ghost Rider Spirit of Vengeance.
Mm.
That was a good one. And his scripts also include the first Ghost Rider movie. And and he wrote and directed Blade 3.
Oh, that's right.
So, yeah, David S. Goyer has got a mixed bag. I mean, this is a man who wrote the first Blade, which I quite liked. He's considered this comic book kind of guru guy.
Mm.
But when you actually go back and look at his stuff, he's not actually that good a writer.
He did do Dark City as well.
Yeah, which is also not that great a film.
I quite like Dark City.
It's okay, but it's not... I mean, Dark City wanted to be... I can't remember which one came first, but it really feels like it wants to be a Matrix-like. Matrix was after it, I'm sure.
Did come off about a year afterwards. Now, look, getting back to this film, I mean, look, Goya sort of is influenced by some classic comics here. He's influenced by Birthright, Mark Waid's Birthright, a marvelous retelling of the
absolutely
story.
Absolutely, fantastic.
To a lesser extent, Geoff Johns' Secret Origins, which we did back in issue 6, I think.
Yeah, and we actually said it was nice, but it was no Birthright.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And, you know, there's elements of Earth 1, which we haven't done on the show.
Which I really enjoyed.
It's a good story. That's Straczynski, isn't it?
Yeah, J. Michael Straczynski. We should do that at some point, because that's a really good book.
It's actually, there's two volumes of it now.
I've read both. Mm. Second volume's not as strong as the first.
Now, I mean, just for all the talk of this being a reimagining, a reinvention, revolution.
Well, I think the exact quote from David S. Goyer was, "I've cracked it. I finally figured out how to make Superman relevant to
that." Yeah, so what he did was he remade Richard Donner's films and threw in elements to make them darker and more like the Batman films.
Yeah, the solution here was to suck all of the life and joy out of the character.
Yeah.
And he's cracked it.
And take Superman out of it entirely.
Pretty much.
It's like that story Kevin Smith tells about when he was called up to the producer's house. He said, "Okay, now, I don't want him in that costume. I don't want him flying, and I don't, and he has to fight a giant spider." But they've just sort of gone, well, let's get rid of the costume, let's suck the joy out, and let's have him fight an angry Michael Shannon.
Yeah.
It's pretty much as far as they got with this. The Superman is a hard character to crack. Superman is the hardest character to crack. I say this in my review on the site. I mean,
it is as hard to do a Superman film as it was to do a Captain America film. I mean,
yeah.
Bottom line is, when you have a character who is just a giant Boy Scout, it is very hard to make this film and make it work.
And which is what Superman Returns proved, that if you take away the big punching bag villain, you just have the giant Boy Scout.
Yeah. Or in the case of Superman Returns, though, he became a sulky stalker. Who went around wandering around...
With a messiah complex.
With a messiah complex, looking in the windows of his ex-girlfriend.
Yeah, that's right.
Floating outside her window. I'm sorry, it was just creepy. And the thing is...
Child mind, Lois.
And what was one of the things? You suck the humor out of it, and you suck the life out of it. It's as simple as that.
And then it just sucks.
And it just sucks. Now, I'm going to go on and say that I didn't think this film sucked. I don't think this film is a terrible film. I think it's a much better film than any of the sequels of Richard Donner's Superman films, you know what I mean? Without doubt. It is and I know you disagree with this, but I think it's a better film than Green Lantern.
I think narratively Green Lantern had a better overall arc.
Green Lantern felt more like a superhero.
Yes, but, I mean, look, this is a better constructed film. I think the action in this is amazing. The problem is the action sequences look amazing and they're fantastic, but they're relentless, and Zack Snyder... I went back when I reviewed Sucker Punch. I think I said something along the lines of, Zack Snyder understands that he recognizes a whole lot of cool stuff from other films. What he has trouble of understanding is why that's cool and why that works in a film. All he knows is how to do is replicate it and put it in his own film.
Yeah.
And I don't think he's ever gotten beyond that. I think in this, he pulls together all these great action sequences, but never actually manages to give them any cohesiveness.
Mm.
And it feels like a whole lot of different levels and things in a video game. It's like, I gave a perfect example, which is like, there seems to be, there's a point later in the film where he's talking to, I was going to say Aunt May, where he's talking to...
It might as well be.
where Cal is talking to Martha Kent, And she's looking through old photos. And then we clumsily stumble into another explosion action sequence. There seems to be a whole lot of bits in between scenes missing.
I think Kevin Smith summed it up for me when he said it's like a Metallica song. It's this constant barrage of sound and fury. And there's never a moment of respite in this film. And that's the problem, is once it gets into gear, it just... In fact, no, what? Forget that. It's in gear from the first scene in Krypton.
Yeah.
And basically, it never lets up.
Well, let's just play a little bit of stuff from those first scenes in Krypton, because they're some of my favorite ones in the film.
You'll be an outcast. A freak. You'll kill him.
How? You'll be a god to them.
But if the ship doesn't make it, he'll die out there, alone. I can't do it. I thought I could, but...
Lara.
Not if he's here.
Krypton is doomed. It's his only chance now. It's our people's only hope.
And I gotta say, I'm not an enormous Russell Crowe fan, but I thought his portrayal of Jor-El was really good. I thought I had no problem with him. You know, I thought he had that presence that was required. And that opening scene in Krypton is thrilling.
Yeah, all that's happened. We've never seen Krypton like that on screen.
No.
And I really, really like that. And from the start, I was kind of actually hopeful for this film. I had a lot of hope, which is it's a concept that they talk about a lot in the film. They talk about hope. But as we've already said, for a film that talks so much about hope, there's very little hope or joy.
There's a saying in filmmaking, which is show us, don't tell us.
Yes.
And they tell us a lot of things in this film, but they never actually walk the talk. And that's the biggest problem that I found with this film, was the fact that I kept waiting for the moment where I'm waiting for the superhero moment where you stand up in your chair and go, you know?
And
it never comes.
No, because I think, again, something else I say in my review, which is the moment he dons the suit, which should be one of those moments where you go...
Yeah. Think about Richard Donner's film, Fortress of Solitude. Marlon Brando's gone through that huge-ass monologue that goes on forever, and then we cut to the theme music kicks in. And there's Christopher Reeve standing in the suit, and he lifts into the air and flies past camera, and you just go, wow.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
and that was amazing, but there is no moment. The putting on of the suit becomes just a narrative necessity rather than that triumphant moment.
And in fact, in the film, it is portrayed in exactly that way. It's like he's saying, one day you're going to have to, you know, face up, and you're going to have to be do your responsibilities, while a door opens in the background with the suit ready made. How he knew his size and everything else, and the right colors and everything. The suit appears. Next scene, he's in the suit walking out in the snow, and you go, that was easy.
They should have had some like Tarantino jive music. They should have had a bit.
He should have strutted out.
Oh yeah, I'm Superman now.
Maybe not quite that far, but what we needed was a big bombastic theme to go along with that. Did we get that?
No, David. the soundtrack is something else. This is of course Hans
Hans Zimmer.
Hans Zimmer, who gave us Batman Begins. Yeah.
Yeah. And he's done some great work. I mean, let's not kid ourselves. I mean, Crimson Tide and Armageddon, and I mean, the guy's done some great work. You know what I mean?
But this soundtrack was a little bit samey.
Yeah, well,
to say the least. For example, let's just play track number one now.
Okay, track number one on the soundtrack.
Okay, sort of moody, getting you in there. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, okay.
Let's play another one. Let's just grab track three.
Track three. Okay, it's moody.
Sort of moody, atmospheric, up an octave. Grab the next one, David.
How about track number four?
Sort of Atmospheric and moody.
Yeah. Okay, so far what we are seeing here is we're seeing a lot of discordant notes.
Yeah, did
I think we got track five here.
I'd say it's discordant, moody, atmospheric.
Mm. Mm.
Did Vangelis do the sound?
Look, I think...
Or Tangerine Dream?
Was it? One of the things that this film seriously needed was it needed a theme. Mm. It needed what John Williams brought to first film. I'm not saying use that, but it needs a theme. It needs Superman music.
Well, for all of Superman Returns, it's false. It gave us the theme.
Well, sure, because Ottman came on to do the score, but Ottman was smart enough to know that Superman's theme is Superman's theme. It is so well known. Mm. And I'm not even saying that they should use that theme because people want to make them. And, you know, J.J. Abrams very successfully gave a brand new theme to Star Trek. Mm. You know what I mean? But he gave it a theme.
Oh, I got even better. I love in the X-Men films how there's still a few notes of the X-Men animated series, that score. Just peppers, just a few little phrases just in there.
Absolutely.
Throughout. That's all you need. That's all you need to do.
The problem with this score, though, is that it's literally a wall of sound that just permeates the whole film, underscoring it, overscoring it, whatever the action may be taking place on the screen. But the music never gave you a clear cue as to who or what was supposed to be happening.
We'll be fair. I mean, there are a few moments of respite in the film. There is the classic Hope speech where he's being interrogated.
Mm.
And I'll just play that now, and then we'll talk about that because it doesn't pay off the way I wanted.
Shall I underscore it with some discordant notes?
Yeah, why not, Dave?
Okay. You let them handcuff you?
Wouldn't be much of a surrender if I resisted. And if it makes them feel more secure.
What's the S stand for?
It's not an S. On my world, it means hope.
Well, here it's an S. How about...
Sir?
The snack.
I'd like to know, did he, like, super fart or something at that point?
No, she was going to say snack.
Whoever says snack.
And that's a nice comic moment. In fact, in the film, there's a whole thing where he's looking through the two-way glass mirror and saying, look, you know...
And as I say, we're bagging on the film a lot. And I did say at the beginning, I didn't hate the film. There are some good moments. And a lot of them come down to these wonderful little character moments. The scene where Martha Kent is talking him down... In the closet is a really beautiful scene.
Yeah, when she's like saying focus on.
Yeah, because he's seeing everything and hearing everything at once, and she's talking him down, basically saying, you know, you're an island, and you know, think of the world, make it smaller, you know, and stuff like that. But the father.
Yeah. So look, basically what we're saying is, it's a very heavy film that's dark, and that's not what Superman is.
No.
To go a little further into why this isn't a Superman film, I think we're going to have to do something we haven't said in a long time, which is we're going to have to crack open the spoiler zone.
I did actually clean up down there, by the way. So,
really?
Yeah, I did.
We got rid of the dead cat?
I got rid of the dead cat, so it should be a little bit better down there.
All right, let's deep breath.
So as we say on any film show that we're doing, and this isn't a film show, but every film show, if you are still listening at this point, it is spoilers on all people, so pull over, stop your radios at this point if you haven't seen the film. If you have seen the film, this is where we get down and dirty with it.
And we're going to talk for a couple of minutes on spoilers. I want to start with Jonathan Kent.
He's a dick.
He is a douche. It's like, yeah, we joked at the top of the show that we're the podcast that would rather let a bus full of school children die than reveal our secret identity. So would Jonathan Kent.
Absolutely.
There's the whole thing. It's in the trailer, in fact. It's not a major spoiler. It's like, you know, should I have let them die? And Jonathan Kent's like, maybe.
Well, but what leads up to that moment they don't show in the trailer, which is he's mad at him. Mm. He goes storming out of the house, slamming the screen door and the whole bit to storm out to him, like, how dare you show your powers in public?
You know.
It's like, I'm sorry, he's a dick. This is not the Jonathan Kent that we know from the
later on. This is the big spoiler. Jonathan Kent does die. And, you know, in a lot of versions, Jonathan Kent dies.
Mm.
He dies in the most ridiculous way possible here.
Well, yeah, because it was completely unnecessary.
Yeah.
I mean, the thing is, when Jonathan Kent dies in Donner's version of Superman, for instance, it's a heart attack. And it's a it's a morality message, because basically it's saying, with all of these powers, I couldn't save him.
But here's a situation where he could have saved him, but Jonathan Kent's saying, no, I don't want you to reveal your powers, so just let me die in this tornado.
Which, we all know Superman's powers. There's no way that he could have not gone, swooped in, grabbed him, came back with the dog, and nobody would have even been the wiser.
No. Now, because we're running out of time rapidly, I have to talk about the biggest non-Superman moment in the history of non-Superman moments. The final battle between... two things about this. The final battle between Zod and Superman results in, according to BuzzFeed, who actually calculated this, 129,000 confirmed dead, 250,000 missing, 1 million injured. Its impact was comparable to the Nagasaki nuke. Monetarily, it cost $750 billion in physical damages. 9/11 was $55 billion. Simulated Avengers damage to Manhattan was $160 billion. Mm-hmm. Overall impact, $2 trillion, I think it was.
And can I point out that it's all Superman's fault?
It's all Superman's fault.
It's all his fault, and where, once again, we stray from the character that we know and love from the comic books, he has no remorse for any of it.
No. He doesn't actually comment on the fact that I'm sorry, I messed up your city. Secondly, towards the end...
Sorry,
dudes. You're just going to have to trust me. in his final confrontation with Zod, Zod is firing his eye beams at the city. At people,
which
rather.
Which looks great.
Which looks great. And Superman's got him in a headlock, so he has a choice. He could do any number of things here. He could fly out of the building with Zod. He could
take him somewhere where there's no civilians around.
He could heroically put his hand over Zod's eyes, injuring himself in the process, but perhaps, you know, saving the people. Now, he snaps Zod's neck and kills him.
but he's crying out
in emo Hayden Christensen-like anguish.
The only time he shows remorse in the entire film
is when he kills the villain. And the villains are, ironically, the most well-structured people in this whole film, because they're the only ones who have a clear motivation from the start. So that is why this is not a Superman film.
Superman does not kill.
Exactly. David, I'm so angry. Let's just get out of the spoiler zone.
All right, so no more spoilers. Let's just say that the destruction in this film is immense. It is Michael Bay Transformers style destruction, which means that you go through so much of it, by the end of it, you just go, I don't care anymore.
No, look, I mean, it is. No, I think you hit the nail on the head. This is a Michael Bay film masquerading as
a Snack Snyder film.
Well, it is a Snack Snyder film, and it's a Michael Bay film masquerading as a Superman film, and unfortunately, for the two of us, you're going to go and see, we recommend it because it's a geek film and you should probably go and see it on that level.
It's a big superhero film. It's got big special effects. It's got all that sort of stuff. And at least it is more coherent than the Transformers film, so that's fine.
But if we were doing this purely as a film review and we weren't fans, I couldn't recommend this film because it is such a disjointed mess of a film. I'd say wait for the Blu-ray.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I certainly wouldn't see it in IMAX because... inflated prices, but also I don't think I could take it.
No, and the 3D wasn't bad for a conversion, but it wasn't earth-shattering either.
No. I mean, look, don't hate it. No. It wasn't as long as it could have been.
I'll see it again. I'll buy it on Blu-ray but
now that the difficult...
For goodness sake, I own Superman 3 and 4. Of course I'm going to own this one,
Look, go out and see it. And hope for that the second film will be the film that we've always wanted.
Yeah.
So, because Henry Cavill's still a decent Superman.
Henry Cavill's fantastic.
Yeah. Right, David, quickly hit up some Girl from Ipanema so we can run through feedback / other stuff.
Oh, where is she? It's here somewhere.
We're a smooth ship.
I rearranged the whole soundboard. Don't comment in all the hellos I'm Chris Claremont.
Look, we're going to keep it really, really light this week. We actually ran into a few people at Supernova. We ran into John D, who's written in a few times. He was dressed as Green Arrow from Smallville. His photo is actually up on the site as well. But one of the things he said to us, which I really loved, was which our show has made him buy more comic books and spend more money than any others.
All right.
Which is really what we want to do. We want to get people into books. So absolutely. Thank you, John. That was a fabulous bit of feedback.
I also want to throw a shout out because we also ran into Jao and Josh, friends of mine yep. at Supernova. Good to see you guys there. Fantastic stuff.
I want to say that the search term of the week this week on the website
oh, please.
Was Headless Aladdin. That was a search term that led people somehow to Behind the Power. I could not find out how.
I don't even know what that would relate to.
No. I've not done maybe one of the Fables or Ferris books or
Aladdin
something.
Or Headless. I'm just trying to think where that falls.
No. No, I really have no idea. Look, if you saw us at Supernova or any of the upcoming cons, you would have maybe got one of our badges or stickers. If you want one of those, see us at the future cons. Otherwise, which would be Oz Comic Con coming up in about a week and a half in Melbourne or New York Comic Con in October. Mm-hmm. Or you can hit up behindthepanels.net and order some of your own from the Cafe Press link over on the right-hand side. If you want to support us, go to behindthepanels.net, go to facebook.com/behindthepanels and like us there.
Reviews on iTunes.
Really hit us up with the reviews on iTunes. Rate us, rank us, recommend us.
These
share
are actually
us.
The best ways you can support us. Yeah. Over financial things, just basically following us on Twitter, following us on Facebook, putting reviews up on iTunes, getting the exposure out there. This is how you support
us. We just look, you know, we're slowly growing and you can help us do that. Mm. So don't make us hit you. Because remember,
don't threaten the fans, man.
Because remember,
act like a bitch, get slapped like a bitch.
So anyway, look, thanks for everyone supporting us. It's been a great run so far this year. Now that we're about halfway through the year, doing a weekly show for the first time in a while, and it's a lot of fun, and we like bringing this to you, even with the terrible films and stuff. But next week we are gonna give you a treat and a half. We're going to give you a Supernova special. We're going to give you, as we mentioned earlier in the show, some interview clips with the likes of Chris Claremont, with Nicholas Scott, with Tom Taylor, with Paul Bedford, with Tristan T-Rex Jones and Alex Sabiuk. We are going to give you some interviews with cosplayers who are on the floor. We're going to bring you the highlights of our 2 days, almost two full days, out there in the cold dome of a dome.
And rainy days.
Oh,
too,
it was
man.
So rainy.
It was horrible.
It was rainy and horrible and cold and freezing, and we loved it. you can probably still hear I've got a bit of a cold from the weekend left over. But look, cons are a great thing. It's a great place for us geeks just to be geeks.
Yeah, absolutely.
Without any consequences whatsoever.
And I think that's really important to state. Somebody actually said to us, are we going to get the really tragic cosplayers too? And I looked at Richard afterwards. I said, Richard, no. Because we're not here to make fun of people. We are here because...
Even that guy who was just dressed in two cardboard boxes.
True, but we are here to say good on them. Yep. You know what I mean? They're having fun. This is what they do.
Everybody know? There was great.
And they got a lot more guts than I do, let me tell you.
Yeah, except with the exception of that one guy who was a little too into character. And he was like a cosplayer playing a villain in an upcoming web series. And he actually walked past me at one point and he was saying to these girls in a cafe, and he was going, oh, I'm playing a villain in a new series and that's why I'm acting like an arsehole. And they said, oh, so you don't just have your arsehole wrestler's face on, do you? And then he walked and he turned around to me and said, out of my way. And I said, please. So, you know, you meet
if
characters.
If you are
like
listening,
that.
You know who you are.
You know who you are. And if you want to come on the show and promote your new web series, well, hit us up at feedback at behindthepanels.net. But, folks, it's been fantastic. Well, there's a few of you we didn't get to meet up with, but there's a bunch of our friends we didn't get to see out there because the thing is just huge.
And it was so crowded.
Oh, so crowded. There was one point we just stood still on Saturday. We couldn't move.
Just stopped. It's like, okay, well, this is a break
time. We're just here until... for a while. But look, folks, next week you will get that special in full. And then we're going to have a week off after that because we need it.
Mm.
But when we come back, we're going to cover a book that we found out about at the con, which is Paul Bedford's The List, which has been doing great guns on Amazon and online. He's got a huge following happening as a result of that. It's an Australian-owned, created, and self-published book. And look, you know, these are the things that we're going to be increasingly highlighting on this show, because we can bring you the big movies like Man of Steel, but everyone's going to be doing that. So we want to highlight a few things that not everybody's doing.
Yeah, it doesn't mean we won't be doing the big films like Man of Steel and stuff as well, but we want to do the other stuff in between.
Absolutely. But guys, until next week, I've had a really good time. You can find me on Twitter. You can find me on therealbits.com. You can find me on behindthepanels.net. And occasionally you can find me on Newsarama. David, where can we find you?
You can find me at geekactually.com, or you can find me on Twitter at David McVeigh. Please follow me. I'll always answer people back. So.
And before my nose falls off completely, I'm Richard Gray.
I'm David McVeigh.
And this is Behind the Panels.